Mrs. Rhoda Woodward will read a short history of the Chatham Baptist Church and the Chatham University Church.
Chatham Baptist Church. It is said that Mary Nickerson of Chatham, a member of the Howitt Church, resolved to hold Baptist meetings at Chatham, which she did in the schoolhouse at Old Harbor. Alone for several Sundays, she was there joined by Merrick Nickerson, and after several more Sundays, two others joined them. In 1824, the schoolhouse was closed against them, and they purchased an old sheep coat, which she had been the first school building at North Chatham, and conducted worship there. In October 1824, the church organization was effected, and in 1827, the meeting house was built. The building was later sold to the St. Martin's Lodge of Masons and has been used by them as lodge room since. Chatham University's Church. The first gathering of dissenters, so-called, was held in the old bull roof house on Queen Anne Road. This house is now part of the Queen Anne Inn property. At that time, it was owned by the grandfather of Rebecca Harding Swan. This meeting was held to discuss the forming of a liberal religious group. The society was organized August 1st, 1822, with 22 members, and was the first Universalist church within the limits of Barnstable County. The Universalists were the third denomination to maintain preaching services throughout this period, the other two being the original Congregational Society and the Methodist Church Society, organized in 1820. The first Universalist Church was built in 1823 within a cemetery then known as the Universalist Cemetery, now known as People's Cemetery. In 1851, they purchased the lot and building formerly known as Chatham Academy. This was located on site of house built by the late Ralph Houchin on Queen Anne Road. The new church building was erected in 1851 at a cost of $6,000. In 1861, a pipe organ was installed to replace the seraphim at a cost of $1,030. The first regular minister who served from 1824 to 1827 in the first building was the Reverend Calvin Monroe. The Reverend Alvin Abbott served as the first minister in the second edifice. About 1877, a movement apparently headed by the pastor, the Reverend B.L. Bennett, was inaugurated to remove the meeting house to a location on Main Street. This was approved by the majority of the church members. In October 16, 1878, this church building burned to the ground. It was thought to be the work of incendiary. The present church was built on the main street and dedicated November 19, 1879. The new organ was also dedicated and first played by Rhoda Nickerson Taylor, through whose efforts the necessary funds for it were solicited. From April 1883 until January 1891, Dr. Harry Cooten, a blind minister and later the chaplain of the National House of Representatives, served this church. At this time, the church had members of wealth, and many church-minded citizens belonged. It was a large and flourishing church, but industrial and economic charges resulted in smaller congregations. During the 1870s to 1890s, large sums were raised each year from a two-day fair and exhibition held in town hall and climaxed by a drama each evening. This, too, is remembered by the Chatham citizens and referred to with pride and praise. It was the outstanding social event of the winter. A mission circle was formed in 1905 and reorganized in 1929. Through the years, the latest social circle functioned, and it was through their efforts that much of the money for carrying on was raised. During the pastorate of Dr. Richard Eddy, from 1891 to 1904, the Young People's Society was discontinued, also the Sunday School, except at intervals. In 1904, the regular meetings of the First Universalist Church of Chatham were discontinued. Services, however, were held nearly every summer during July and August. The hurricane of September 1944 damaged the church edifice extensively, both inside and out. After much discussion by parish members and friends of the church, money was raised, and with a loan from the Massachusetts Universalist Convention, the damage was repaired, and the church was reopened for year-round services after a period of 40 years. These services were continued for about 9 years. Ministers serving during that time were Reverend Albert Ziegler, Reverend John Christensen, and Reverend Charles DeRees. Mr. DeRees found his congregation so small that he recommended that year-round services be discontinued. This was done, but not until our debts were all paid and there was quite a surplus of funds for church in our treasury. The deeds to the property have, according to custom, when regular services are discontinued, been turned over to the Massachusetts Universalist Convention. We believe they intend to reopen for summer services at some date in the near future, possibly next summer, 1956.
Miss Grace Hardy will now read of the Congregational Church history.
William Nickerson was the first settler of Chatham. Before a minister was secured, he is said to have conducted neighborhood services and acted as religious teacher and counselor for the little settlement, which at that time was almost entirely made up of the Nickerson kindred. William Nickerson died in 1690. By that time, many more settlers had arrived, and it was realized that the time had come to provide for the people a settled minister and a permanent place of worship. So a meeting house was built in 1700. It was a little building about 22 feet square with walls 13 feet high. Its four roofs tapered to a point at the top and looked much like the district schoolhouses of a later date. It stood by the roadside just west of Great Hill in that part of the old cemetery where the oldest graves are found. It was certainly not plastered and probably not shingled. Every man in the settlement had a hand in the building. Jonathan Vickery was the first minister. He came here from Hull. He was not an ordained minister, but he was a very smart man and a fine speaker, and the congregation flourished under his leadership.
Okay.
On April 30th, 1702, he went out in an open boat with a party of villagers, probably on a fishing or whaling trip. In some way, the boat was overturned and all were drowned. He left a widow and seven children. After the death of Mr. Vickery, the town hired several other men to preach. They were educated men, mostly college graduates, and the church prospered under their teaching. All this time, there was no organized church in Chatham, and matters pertaining to church affairs were arranged by sending messages to the church at Eastham. A church council was convened at Chatham on June 15, 1720, with ministers and messengers from other churches present, and the Chatham Church was formally organized and officered. Church attendance had increased so much in the last few years that the meeting house could not accommodate all the worshipers. So in 1730, a new building was finished on the other same location. This was a substantial, permanent structure and served its purpose for about 100 years. There was no plastering on the walls. Benches on each side of a center aisle were used to seat the people. With one exception, there were no pews. The minister's wife possessed the only pew in the house. In 1773, this building was enlarged by the addition of a new wing on either side. The locality where these first meeting houses were built was then the center of the town, and the church was supported by the town in the same way that the schools are now. During all this time, the church had had no rivals, but in 1816, the Methodists established a society here. The Universalists followed in 1822 and the Baptists in 1824. By 1824, the opposition to the regular church had grown so strong that it was no longer possible to continue it as an institution supported by the town. At a town meeting held on August 9, 1824, the town voted not to raise the $500 for the minister's salary. The members of the church then met and organized themselves into the First Congregational Parish of Chatham on October 18, 1824. The center of population was fast changing from the Great Hill section to the east side of the township. As a result of the question to move the old building, it was decided to tear it down and distribute it to the pew owners. The present building was erected in 1830 on the land now used by the congregational people and others as a cemetery. It was a neat, up-to-date, well-finished structure and cost $2,920.77. Many people who believed in very plain worship did not approve of the very elegant house. Especially, they criticized the crooked pew arms. The new church had a steeple, but no bell. And about 1831, the parish, wishing to make a little more sound, purchased a sweet-toned bell and paid for it by a subscription. It is said that at first the janitor wasn't quite sure of his duties, so for a while he rang it before and after the service. It is in this building, erected in 1830, somewhat remodeled and moved to its present location in 1866, in which we now worship, and it is the same bell whose tones we now hear. The records of the church were lost in the fire which burned the parsonage in 1861, so these facts have been gathered from the recollections of Deacon Levi Atwood, written in 1895 for the 175th anniversary of the church, and from the historical address written by William C. Nickerson and read by him on the 200th anniversary. 50 ministers have served this old church since William Nickerson first gathered his kindred and neighbors together for worship. Never at any time during its history has the meeting house been closed, except for a Sunday or two, and never has a minister been dismissed, but that immediately steps have been taken to secure another to take his place. By the bishops, whilst commissioned circuit riders who were given large territories to work in as best they could, preaching whenever and wherever they could find hearers. Many of these men were without formal education, but were required to have rugged health, a horse, a Bible, and zeal. Such a man was Jesse Lee, who asked to be assigned to New England, not because the region was without churches, but he felt religion here had become too formalized, too much a matter of the head and not enough of the heart. He was on the case between 1791 and 96. And as a result, the area from Provincetown to Sandwich was set off as a circuit and preachers assigned. One of these preachers, Reverend Snelling, wrote in 1796 of being warmly received in Chatham. But the breaking away from our congregation church came with the formation of a Methodist church in East Harwich in 1795. They built a meeting house in 1799. The church grew rapidly and was incorporated in 1809 with certain Chatham men on the list of incorporators. In 1811 and 12, they erected a new meeting house nearer the Chatham line, and this house is still a place of worship for that community. The list of contributors to the building fund was headed by Ensign Nickerson of Chatham Port with a gift of $500. We cannot say how many Chatham people belonged there, but there was quite a number. All went well until 1816, when Pliny Brett, a former minister, decided Methodism was growing soft and too worldly, and he set out on a reformation. The result was a broken church. At the height of the excitement, the preacher Moses Byfield was forbidden pulpit. This break seems to have been the reason a class was started in Chatham in October 1816. The leader was Isaiah Nye. Other members were Henry and Martha Gorham, McCager and Rebecca Howes, William and Mehitable Hamilton, Samuel Nye, Dorcas Eldridge, September elders, Dorcas Bloomer and Tabitha Harding. By now, the circuit had been cut in two, and Moses Byfield covered the path from East Harwich to Sandwich, traveling the territory on horseback. These men had no parsonage or home. They boarded among the members, sure of care for themselves and their horse. They took collections at each station and kept $64 a year each by way of wages. If they collected more than that, the extra was taken to annual conference where it was distributed among the less fortunate. The group was kept in readiness for the preacher's visit by the class meeting. As more people came in, new classes were formed and leaders assigned by the preacher. In the class, instruction in the church tenets, advice, admonishment, encouragement were given by the leader generally and to each person separately. When the preacher came, the regular functions of the church, such as baptism, reception of members, and communion, were performed, as well as consultation with the leaders. Protracted meetings were part of the preacher's visit. This was a lengthening of the evening meeting into a period of testimony and exhortation. Quite often, in fact, general, an emotional affair. In 1819 and 20, Chatham Methodist built a meeting house, a rough hall with benches for seats, lighted by candles fastened to the wall with two tiny forks, with a candle set in a roll from the salt works lighting the pulpit. The hall cost $900. Financial support was voluntary. But Massachusetts law said every taxpayer should contribute in his proportion to the established order. Therefore, the minister's tax was part of the town's tax bill and collected by town officers. To avoid having to contribute to two churches, a member of the newer sect would secure a certificate of membership from the secretary of his church, which, presented to the town officer, acted to remove the minister's tax from his general town tax. But the law still required that he pay a minister's tax. So there came about the formation of church societies. These attended to collection of taxes and other monies and the paying out of the same. The Methodist Society was organized in 1821 with Christopher Taylor of Atwood Street as secretary, a position he had been filling. He continued to serve in some official capacity in the church until 1866. This body also chose 10 law deans at their first meeting. These men were charged with keeping order in the house of public worship, somewhat of the same nature as the tithing men. Where the word law deans came from, we haven't been able to discover, but it belonged to this body here. Parallel to this organization was a committee devoted to the spiritual side, including applications for membership and general discipline. This was known by various names, and from it was developed the Board of Stewards. This last was chosen from church members only, but in the society, any contributor could belong. The power of vote belonging only to legal voters of the town. Both sections were masculine affairs. It was after 1900 when women were admitted to the Board of Stewards as regular voting members. The land for the first meeting house was given by Isaiah and I, and land adjoining this was acquired in 1833 for the purpose of erecting a new meeting house and to give more room for the cemetery. The new building was 46 by 38 feet with 17-foot posts. After being superseded as a meeting house, it was acquired for the town as its first town hall. Later was moved over onto Old Harbor Road, where it was the first, where it was an almshouse, and is now a rooming house. The contract called for it to be finished as well and after the manner of the new congregational meeting house, except for the sofa ends on the pews. In 1834, a preacher was assigned to Chatham alone. This required a parsonage. and such a house existed near the present Elridge Garage. About this time, there arose a group called Carmonklers. They were especially strong in 1839 and 40, and did weaken the regular sects for a while, and added to the general dissension in the period, when interpretation of some Bible text would separate friends, yes, even separate families. The church was the center of not only religious, but social life. In 1839, singing school was started by the Methodist people. It grew into a definite social program. The decade from 1842 was one of the busiest in the church history. It took a stand against intemperance and against slavery, also developed an anti-tobacco pledge. Dancing and the theater were frowned upon. Bundling was condemned. And among all this, there was much controversy over more room in the old building or for a new building, which culminated in the building of the present edifice in 1849. 3 years previously, a new parsonage had been built on Cross Street. This turned, moved back, and somewhat changed. Still serves as the pastor's home. The rest of the hill was bought at the site of the new edifice. The church now numbered 130 families. The minister's salary was $300 plus parsonage. The new church cost about $12,725. Pews were sold and added sums toward the building fund. A bell was acquired, and in 51 a clock was installed in the tower. These paid for by gifts. About now, too, the Sunday school was reorganized. Even adults were in the classes. They had begun to recognize that a knowledge of the Bible was as necessary as the emotional stand. Music for church service was furnished by a volunteer chorus, accompanied by a small organ played by Miss E.H. Gould. The women had been given many tasks, such as teachers in the Sunday school and also custodians of the various pledges previously mentioned, but they had no official standing. In 45, they organized the Female Benevolent Society of the Chatham Methodist Episcopal Church. Its formidable name was shortened to Ladies' Aid in its early years. They met each week to sew and thereby earn money. After the new building became available, they changed from meeting in homes to gathering in the church, and it was they who finished the room now known as the Ladies' Parlor. Their financial assistance helped the trustees out of several predicaments, and finally, they were invited to sit in on the meetings of the stewards, not to have a vote, just to sit in. During the Civil War, the poor fishing bounty was noted as adding to the difficulties of meeting obligations. This was due to many men being in the armed services and to the Confederate. In 1864, the total budget was $1,000, but by 1865, the outlook had cleared, and a committee headed by Ephraim Taylor undertook the addition of the present choir gallery and the installing of a pipe organ. This change made the rear pews more attractive, and their sale aided in meeting expense. Before, with the choir sitting in the gallery over the vestibule, now closed off, the people sitting in the rear pews, as they stood up to sing, had to face the choir in that they could not see. After 18, several small things were done to the church. The pew doors were removed and some painting done, but still each pew was an individual affair. It had such cushions, such stools and such carpeting as it pleased the owner of the pew to put down. In 1898, Mr. and Mrs. Marcellus Elridge entirely renovated the building with a new organ, new furniture, new carpet, cushions for the pews, and the beautiful stained and painted glass window. This is a sketch only of the progress of the Methodist Church and does not cover the modern period. The early days were important. We must remember that the earliest settlers came to this country to establish a church to their own liking. So there were habits as well as laws which had to be modified to meet the needs induced by more and different denominations. Therefore, the growth of this church also covers a period of growth in the community thinking and was not accomplished without confusion and disagreement. These records are being made on October 23rd, 1955.